Round sends Collingwood to half forward. Again, it's Cox. He beats Graham point blank. He has a bounce in the wind. And the lanky Yankee, he's done it again.
He thought he was Michael Long there at one stage, Mason Cox, last night, running and bouncing and kicking great goals. The Magpies too good for the Suns, 22 points in the end. In a slippery affair up at the Gabba. Rodney Eade was watching it all unfold, as he does in Coach's Corner. Hello, Rockets.
Hello, Daniel. Adam, how are you going?
We're going well, thank you, sir. How's yourself?
Yeah, very good. This lovely Tuesday morning. Looking forward to the finals.
Yes, well, they're just around the corner, Rocket. And one piece of the puzzle was put into place last night with the Magpies and their win over the Gold Coast Suns. It took a while for them to break the Suns, but now they are locked in for another finals campaign.
Yes, they are. They got jumped early, didn't they? I think as Pendlebury said after the game, that it was dry before when they were doing their warm-up, and then it was a bit slippery straight away and got caught. And they gave two goals from kick-ins from Maynard.
Yes.
you think he had a Gold Coast jumper on. And they certainly looked a better side, and there's far better forward set up. Even last night when they've kicked goals, they kicked 10 and probably their highest score for quite a while. You could tell their forward entries, it's a bit of a battle, isn't it? Except for DeGoey coming back to kick 4. Cox looked better. And those two up forward really just give them something to kick to. If they don't have them, or they don't have DeGoey probably more than anyone, I think they're going to really struggle in the finals. But that gives them an opportunity if Sidebottom gets back. I don't think Howe will get back, but Phillips and a couple of other minor ones around, that gives them a bit of a sniff at least.
Yeah, the DeGoey impact is quite profound, isn't it? There's not too many players in the competition that seemingly have that effect on their team. And not only does he impact scoreboard, but he makes the players around him better as well. And we saw that again with Mason Cox last night.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And I think it causes opposition trouble. So now they're getting a bit tight in defence about with him around. And a couple of his goals were stoppages. So his ability of stoppages to be on the move, and his power and to be able to kick goals, he just adds. No, he's got quite a few strings through his bow, except set shots. He's very poor at that. He's shocking at that. But he adds confidence to the players up the field. He'll get it in quicker.
Yeah.
He adds confidence to Cox, and the second goal that Goey got, Cox really just contested and actually pushed it down in front of him because he knew DeGoey was going to be there. So I think Cox is a frustrating player for the supporters, but I think he shows his value that he needs to be there in the team.
Collins on DeGoey was interesting.
Yes, it was. I think seems to me as if they'd like to play him as a last line. And probably as a matchup, he's got reasonable speed, Collins, and in the air, you'd think he'd be okay to push it away. But he's quite one-dimensional, Collins, and DeGoey's multi-dimensional. I don't know who you could play on him. It's a bit like playing Dustin Martin, isn't it? It's the same. But he outmarked Collins there when he bodied him, and then he handballed to Majacek. He's agile, which Collins is not. Collins is on the tram tracks a bit. I don't know who they could play on him. It'd be an interesting one. I'd have thought last night of teams going into the finals, have your match up for him. But when there's a stoppage in the forward 50, have someone else go to him. So you roll over and have someone who can play at stoppages better and have got craft around stoppages, because he can lose them in that, and his ability to change direction and pick them. Because he's a midfielder. He's got, like Martin, who are great power and can mark the footy. So the fact he is a tough matchup. The Suns' defence is all about having that extra player back, so they try and support each other. So I think they'll probably, Collins to cope with him in many of the situations, but have someone else to be able to roll off and maybe block his leading lane and block and help him on the ground, which I just think DeGoey was too good for them.
Which I must admit, Rocker, watching the game last night, I thought was a bit of an Achilles heel for the Suns, because they were able to get the ball with good speed into their forward half of the ground, and they just didn't have representation. The Magpies outnumbered them 1 and 2 every time, so they had no chance to actually get the ball inside their forward half and keep it.
No, and that's the way they've played, is they've loved they sort of play three-quarter ground, really, have maybe maximum one forward, flood the midfield and flood the defence. And there's a lot of times last night you could see that Collingwood were kicking it out, say, to a contest, and the Suns were outnumbering them consistently there. And they'd all, and their number one ward, if that's the right phrase, is having extras in defence to support each other. So teams really have struggled at times to score against them. Carlton opened them up by going short. And the same with the Lions last week. The Lions just picked them off because they defend, because they collapse. Now they go back and defend rather than come forward at the play. But their pressure around the ball is very good. But you're right. If you keep doing that, you actually suffer another way. Is not helping King. You're not helping the forwards because you haven't got enough forwards at home.
Yeah, I thought it was a real opportunity. He's lost a few times, Whitey.
Yeah, the Suns have won 5 games for the year, but they've only won once since round 7, and that game was against North Melbourne. I think there's more optimism about the Suns this year than perhaps in other years. But I still think they've got a fair bit of work to do. Because, in a lot of ways, they had that game to be... They were there to win that game, I thought, at times. You know, they just butchered the ball and butchered their opportunities, but I'm just more interested, Rocket, from a Collingwood perspective, because they are now officially playing finals. The experience of them being there before and winning finals, how much of an advantage is that going to be once they get there? It's not so much switching on the switch, but do you think once they get there, it starts again and they can get their mojo going again? Because they're still just not the team they were.
No, they're not. Yeah, I think they can. I think Treloar back, he played well last night, and it'll be interesting to see how he pulls up. They've got to be mindful of his hamstring as well. But, yeah, I think they can. I think, from your question, mentally they can. I think they'll be confident. I think they can, not flick a switch, as you said, but I think they can go in with confidence. We have a week's bye break going into the finals. And I think everyone's going to refer back to the Bulldogs in 16, how much it helped them. But they've got to get some game time in. Side bottom, hopefully he comes back for them. He's a naturally fit person, not going to worry, but it's having Treloar and DeGoey now got a game under their belt. Next week I'd be playing them, but I'd manage their minutes next week. It's not to me, if I was Collingwood, I know you want to win games, and I'm not saying that you take it easy next week, but it doesn't matter where they finish in the 8. 5-8 doesn't really matter. So I don't think
Perth,
that they should. So there's a chance to be played in finals.
There's a chance to be in Perth. Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, just be mind. No, I wouldn't. I know they took DeGoey and Treloar off with a minute and a half to go, but it's always the second game back where the soft tissue is vulnerable. So you know, you're just going to be mindful, really, about. They don't want any players to break down next week. So I know you don't go with that attitude, you don't tell the players that, but you just be mindful where it is. So it's, to me, the result is not ultra important next week. It's about getting some game time in, getting the system up, getting their confidence up, and the result will look after itself. Now, it's against a quality side, so that'll be a good test for them. But I think they can gain some confidence from next week, and I think they can go into the finals with some confidence. And I think they can beat them. You know, if they play the Eagles in Perth, they can beat them as well.
I was going to say, Harf, I don't think Collingwood would fear playing West Coast in Perth.
No, they've had a good record in Perth. But it's something you probably don't necessarily need, is it?
No, you'd prefer to play St Kilda at the Gabba. But it was 6v7 or something like that. But, they're an interesting case, Collingwood, because I thought they moved the ball better. Like, while they did chop it a bit and all that sort of thing, at least they tried to move the ball a bit quicker, which has been, you know, one of their criticisms, particularly through the middle part of the year, that they had become so dour with ball in hand. At least they tried to, you know, change the angles and try and move the ball a little bit quicker, which clearly was the case last night. So, I don't think anyone would want to play Collingwood in a final.
No, they're always a dangerous team.
I think with that bye, I think probably maybe even 4 of the from 5 to 8, but at least 3 of them, teams who are in the top 4 wouldn't want to play them if they're up and about. So the Bulldogs on the go, the Eagles get their players back, Collingwood get some players back as well. They have got some players back, the side bottom comes back. Yeah, certainly that second week of the finals will be a testing time for the teams that lose the first week in the top four.
Just on the Gold Coast, Wade, just done a little bit of a deep dive into their season, because you thought there's still some questions to be asked, and that's absolutely right. But they are sitting at the moment with their best ever percentage in a season. Now, well, shortened seasons, yep, and shortened games and all that sort of stuff. But it's what they've done defensively that's been quite remarkable. They've coughed up, there's a game to go, obviously, and they've got the Hawthorn on Sunday, I think it is, next week. The previous low number of goals scored against them in a season was 296. That was in 2014 when they won the 10 games, and their percentage was 93.74. This season, they have conceded only 133. That's 163 goals less. Now, again, shortened quarters, take 20% off or whatever you need to do. But that's a vast improvement defensively, Rocket, to be able to...
And that's five games as well, so five games less. And...
Yeah, but even the average is still way less.
Oh, the average is probably a better way to go, yeah.
Yeah, we're looking at averages.
Yeah, but they've certainly improved defensively. And I think they've got fitter, and I think they get the numbers back and then try and get teams on the counter-attack. And they've helped. What they've done very well is their defenders really support their teammates. That goal that Dugowie handballed to Majacek, Majacek's opponent, Majacek led and he just trailed him, and then it was kicked long to Dugowie. I think Treloar kicked it to his advantage, and Majacek's opponent just sprinted back to try and make a two-on-one. Now, he would have covered 30 or 40 metres really quickly. Dugowie marked it. If it hit the ground, well, it's a two-on-one, they'd probably defend the goal. But he's marked it in the handball to Majacek, so it was a bit unfortunate for the Suns' defender. But that's their mentality. They really leave their opponents to support their teammates. And that's what they've been able to create, two and threes on one, by having numbers back and also players supporting each other.
So average-wise, and with an extra 20%, they'd average 9.9 goals against this year. Their previous best lowest was 13.5. That's a good chunk. That's 4.5 goals a game, goals a game.
And that's certainly been their foundation, is to be able to do that. And around the contest, they've been reasonably good. But I think they, as you said, they need to improve. They've got some holes in the team, like every team has. They probably just need another midfielder. Rao will come back and is going to improve that, there's no doubt. And maybe some speed in the forward line, where the Rankin improves. So they've got some really good kids there. They're going to get better, aren't they? Lukosius and... Rankin and Anderson and Rao, if they get another good draft pick. So I think they'll improve again next year.
Yeah, interesting to see how they go. Who, with your eye at the moment, Rocket, who are you leaning to just as we head into a finals campaign? There's Brisbane and Port aren't getting the love from the media, they say, and they're a bit annoyed about that, which I'm surprised about, I must admit. But who are your eye cast to?
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'm any different to anyone else. I mean, you just got to like Richmond, don't you? I think it could be just an attrition finals where if players get injured, and even the Tigers, if they lose a couple, it will count against them. So it'll just be who can, A, get their game going, but B, numbers available. At this stage, Port haven't got many injuries, and they've got a pretty well-balanced team, but I still like Richmond. If Lynch, he's injured, does that impact their forward ability to kick goals? No, Rewalt's in good form, but having another tool next to him to take the heat off helps. I think it's going to be a fascinating final series where, even though they're not getting the love, I just think Port and Brisbane could really cause some trouble. So... But at this stage, Richmond, you'd have to have their nose in front, but anything could happen.
I'm surprised that Ken Hinckley and Chris Fagan have got a bit defensive about them not being spoken about.
Yeah.
That didn't make much sense to me. I think, A, they'd prefer to be under the radar, and B, does it really matter? You know, coaches always say it doesn't really matter what the media think, it's what we think internally. But the thing that I will say is the reason why a lot of people aren't really rating them is that they haven't done it yet. So Brisbane played in two finals last year and both lost them both. And Port Adelaide haven't played in finals for such a long time. So that's why there's a lack of trust in them, because we haven't seen them do it yet in September. So that's...
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, but, and yeah. I'm not even sure if it's a lack of trust. It's probably just that wariness about that lack of love, I suppose, more than anything. Because, as you said, Richmond have done it before, so we're effusive about them. And there's still probably Geelong has that doubt as well because of the finals that they've lost.
Absolutely.
But as we know, it's a very different season. So I think, coming back to injuries, key players out. I think everyone says back, you know, coaches and now the media have called on, oh, the system-based, we're system-based, we've got to back our system. But if you lose talent, I don't care what system you got, your system might keep you in the gun, but you're not going to win. And, you know, Lynch is out and they lost, certainly lost Martin, but they lost another couple of key players. Maybe struggle. Andrew's out. I know Chris Fagan's trying to defend, but having Andrews out against a really good side in a final, that's going to hurt them. So if you lose key players or positions that are vital against the opposition they play, I reckon they'll expose teams. So that's where the injuries to me, and this cumulative and playing these games all in a row and compressed season, is going to take its toll on players' bodies. And there's no doubt that that has already, with some players are getting the soft tissue, and there's been a lot of hamstrings.
All right, I'm going to put both of you under the pump here. What should Carlton do with Eddie Betts? Should he play on next year? Because they've got to make a decision this week, because if he's not going to play, he's got to have a sort of a tribute game.
Farewell.
Should he play on, or should he stop? Rocket?
No, time's up. I think Carlton have got to make some tough calls now. I think they've been exposed a little bit. They're one of the oldest squads that play consistently every week. One week they were the second or third oldest, another one was fifth or sixth oldest. I think, and I don't know for what the reason is, but not many of the supposed good kids that have been taken high in the draft haven't played a lot of games, and I think that's been a mistake, because it was a chance. Even though they thought they were going to make the finals, they weren't going to make the finals. And that was an opportunity, like Frio have done, to be able to play some kids and get some game time. So next year, these kids will have 10, 15, 20, 25 games instead of 5 and 8 games. And I think they need to play the kids. And I think Eddie's been a great servant and terrific, and everyone loves him. But I think his time's up, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he's vulnerable, absolutely vulnerable at the moment. I think that there's a question before that question, I reckon. Why is the AFL and the AFLPA, should they have had the list sizes decided before this week?
Yes.
That these decisions could be made for players like, if it's to be Eddie, but also, Brooke Gibbs and Cruiser, if they was going to play, and Stratton and Popolo, who announced their retirements yesterday from the Hawks' perspective, that it would make it a lot more palatable for footy fans, I think, and clubs to be able to deal with their great servants and give them a chance to farewell in an appropriate sense. So I think that's... it's a weird world we live in. Not always the case is it possible, but I think that would have been really nice for clubs to have a bit more line of sight, Rocket, on their list size, so they can make these decisions really, really assertively in the last couple of weeks.
They've got a lot of work to do at AFL House, and they probably have started to do it, and they've got a lot of staff missing, but they've got the sight to the clubs on list sizes, salary cap's got to come, the draft, how the VFL looks, and they're obviously all away from Melbourne. There's a lot of information, or there's a lot of things that need to be bedded down before teams can make decisions. They're probably going to have to make decisions in a bit of cloud, to be honest, with a bit of fog in front of them, without knowing the true landscape. So it's going to be interesting whether clubs like Carlton phone the AFL and say, well, listen, I know you can't announce it, but where does it look like it's going to land?
Yeah,
there's no doubt. So, but I think Eddie's goals have dropped right off. Still a bit live-by, but you just notice little things with older players, things that they could do, they just start to drop away. Like, he's a two-touch player now, Ed. And I've just noticed with all old players, there's just little things that go, gee, that player didn't make that mistake normally. And you can just tell it, just time is just catching up.
All right. So there's that one. Now, the other interesting one to me yesterday was... No, I don't think he should play on. I personally don't think they should have got him to the football club in the first place, but back.
No.
I understand why they did, and it did give, it did make a lot of Carlton people feel good that, that he came back, and I kind of understand the symbolism of it. But
There's more to it than that. Yeah. There's a whole lot more than just symbolism. What he does culturally,
is
super important for a group that's trying to emerge and trying to be, hopefully soon enough, a Blues fans a finals team. What he does with the playing group and the way he mentors players is significant. Cannot be underestimated.
Yeah, and I probably said the wrong thing there. I meant saying symbolism, sort of that, not just for the fans, but for what it represented him coming back and what Carlton means to him, and or what you said. I understand why they did it. So, anyway, the Hawthorn situation is interesting. We've spoken a lot, Rocket, and you were one of the first to sort of say Hawthorn, you know, you're not going to make the finals, and you've got to really attack your list and look at it strongly. Well, we're starting to see that now with Puopolo the first to go, Ben Stratton, which I must confess surprised me a little bit. What they've also come out and said, Gunston, Bruce, Smith are not on the trade table. They want to keep them. Is that the right thing for Hawthorn to do, or should they be a little bit more, not so much savage, but be a bit more aggressive in the way that they look at renovating their list?
It's a good point. Again, list numbers comes into play. If I was them, I think there's probably some senior players they're going to have to keep. I think you've got to weigh that up. What would you get for them if you traded them? Now, do you test the market, and then the players get upset because you're testing the market with them? So it's a balancing act. Like for me, if Isaac Smith, the best you can get is a late second round, well, I wouldn't trade him. If Luke Bruce, if you can get a first round, yes, I would. But for a second round for Bruce, Gunston, no, probably not. So I think you need to weather those conversations with other clubs, but they always leak out if it does happen. I look at it a bit differently. I know Alistair tends to defend in his own narrative where he wants to head with things, whether it's the rules or the way the game's been played or protecting coaches. But he's saying, oh, the draft is so compromised this year. In other words, I don't want to go to the draft because it's so compromised. That's the message he's selling to me. And and that's what he does. He's always selling something underneath what he's saying. My view on the draft is, and I'm not across it totally, but is if the list sizes come back, a lot of teams, if not a lot, quite a few teams, won't go to the draft as much. So there's going to be more players available at the back end than you would normally. So you might pick a lot more diamonds in the sand than what you have in the past. They're going to be more available. So teams, instead of having five picks, might have three picks. So therefore, if I was Hawthorn, I'd take it and try and get some draft picks. And like, if it goes back from 45 to 40, there's five extra players you cut. So get rid of 10, get rid of 11, and I'd have six or seven picks, knowing that you're going to get a better look at player 40 to 80 than you've ever done before. And there's going to be more available. There's going to be more medium stock available that you can turn into good players. Like they Warple. They got Warple at 40, whatever they did. There's going to be more Warples available, and he's one of the best and fairest, than there is ever going to be. So I would look at it in a positive sense and attack the draft. Now, the top-end draft players are going to be, but you're going to get more down the bottom end. If they've got more picks, I reckon they can really jag some. And if they're on their game, and they've always been reasonable development. I know there's not as many staff, but just back themselves. So maybe keep Smith, Bruce, and Gunston, and they've got kept Burgoyne. Maybe it's Henderson, other players around that vintage. Clean them out, blokes that aren't up to it. Clear the list and then bring some draft. And that means they're going to be in bottom four again. But the good year is with these players they know can be players. So, that's the way I'd attack it.
That's interesting. It's a good summary of what might happen through the middle of the draft. You're right. That does make sense.
I have a suspicion that they'll trade their first pick and do what you said, Rocket, and then try and get the picks from the later picks. I reckon they're more likely to bring... And look, maybe they do it by bringing in a free agent. I'm not sure. and keep their pick. But I still reckon they'll go for it to bring another big name in, at least one.
They've got to bring. Got to
I can't
pick.
See. If they do it free agency, okay. I can. I if I was a supporter, or I'd live with that. But trade away, pick three or pick two or what? Pick three. No way. I reckon they compromise. That's they're not going to make the finals next year. So what's the sense of getting a big name if you're not going to play finals?
This is the whole thing about Rocket having. I still think there's a place in the AFL for having an independent consultant that comes in and actually tells teams where their list is at. Because I reckon internally, they overrate their own list.
No doubt. And that's what we spoke last year, I think, with Jimmy on the show as well. We spoke about that. And teams fall for that. St Kilda fell for that a few years ago. Oh, we're close. Finished ninth 2 years in a row. Well, we're ready to go. Then they fell away. Our team, you're right. Clubs overrate where they're at. And they make overrate their lists. And what they do when they rate the list, oh, we're ninth, this is where we're ready to go. But they don't realise the competition's going to improve either as much. And they probably overachieved to get to ninth, where they probably should have finished 12th. That's a great effort. But the competition's going ahead. Maybe Hawthorn, when they finished fourth at the end of that home and away and lost two finals only just, that was overachieving. They did extremely well, but they were about eighth.
I agree.
And teams do that, and you're right. Clubs do that, and you go, "Hang on, you're not anywhere near it." Like Carlton thought that they'd make the finals, and they could say, "Oh, we got close. We lost a couple of games, close games," but they also won a couple of close games. So they're about where they are, and I don't know. And they're on old side, so I think there's a lot of factors in, and clubs do overrate themselves. To me, Hawthorn are not going to make the finals next year. They're not, and we said about Adelaide that they were going to finish down the bottom. Now Adelaide thought that they weren't going to be. But generally, people pick it reasonably. And there's always an outlier. For me to get for Hawthorn to get a top liner with an early draft pick, if I was on their board or on their footy committee or whatever, I'd be questioning that because it's not our long-term strategy. They've got to come up with a long-term strategy, not our Clarkson strategy. It's got to be a club strategy where they're heading. Now, he can argue with that. That's good and have some robust discussion. Not a problem. But to give away pick three for whoever, for Joe Danaher, say, I'm not saying it's him, but say pick three, I'd be totally against it.
Well, Alistair Clarkson had made a concession on the weekend, which was probably the first time it's got to that point where he's almost saying it's not about not winning every week, but it's about seeing what we've got, seeing which of these players we've got in our list that young players can play. At the moment. So that's the first time I've really heard him talk about development in the last little while with his batch of Hawks Rocket. So I think there's been a concession from him that there clearly is a time now for the club and for his team to build something for the future.
Yeah, yes, and probably need to play that some kids earlier, to be honest, as well. So, it was heading south mid-season, wasn't it? You could tell where they were going to be, and they weren't going to threaten. Even if they made the finals, which they're never going to, but they're never going to threaten at the pointy end. So, like, Finn McGuinness, to me, is late to be playing him in the season, to be playing him, with two games to go. Probably give him a go 6 or 8 weeks to go. So the more games, the best form of development. I mean, you can develop a lot of ways. You can have a lot of coaching, a lot of vision, time. The best form of development is playing games because they learn on the they learn on the spot. And they get in the situations, they go, oh, I didn't realise it was so quick, oh, these players did this to me and that to me, their body use, et cetera, et cetera. And you just learn your craft. That's what they always say, you've got to give them at least 30 games till they start to, some people say 50, to actually click in. And you've got to get those games into them. And I think Carlton have lost an opportunity this year, and I think Hawthorn have lost an opportunity with some of their players too.
Got to live it to learn it. You speak about development from a coaching perspective. Well, that's becoming more difficult as well. I spoke about list sizes before, but we saw yesterday the Bulldogs cut a few coaches. This is what's coming. We talked about the Gold Coast a couple of weeks ago. Dale Morris, Joel Corey, Jordan Russell, and Ben Graham's leaving the footy ops role, which I thought was interesting. But it's going to become more difficult, Rocket, to develop these players like has been previously done because they won't have access to the manpower, so to speak.
No, that's right. It's going to be interesting how the AFL in a whole, but then in how clubs manage that and what they, with $3 million out of their soft cap, where they prioritise their money. And if you're going to lose $3 million, there's got to be some staff to go. That doesn't necessarily just coaches as well. It's got to be recruiting and IT and medical and rehab area and high performance. So all that across the board. And we aren't only just hearing about coaches. But you're right, if you've got 10 coaches and five of them are development, and you lose, well, there's four you mentioned out of the Bulldogs. The Suns lost five. So you're always going to have a line coach match day and a senior coach. There's four. You're probably only going to have maximum two people in development. And now if they have a VFL team, they've said that's the next layer. What does a VFL or their underlying system look like? Yeah. And they go with their own VFL team. How are they going to have enough coaches? It's going to be interesting to see how the AFL and clubs manage all this and the time that put in. Because as assistant coach, even if they say they're on 150,000, they put a lot of hours in. They put enormous hours in assistant coaches and what the demands on them. They're not only AFL, but they do the VFL and they go there and the time they put in. So they're going to get less. So not only coaches will go, coaches that survive will be on less and they'll be asked to do more hours. And I reckon it'll be fascinating, like Lenny Hayes and Brad Miller, the Giants.
Yeah.
Do coaches opt, oh no, I'm not going to do this anymore because there's not enough money, I'll look another career change. I'm going to do something else. And I think there'll be footy staff who are asked to stay and offered a contract who'll choose, no, I'm not going to do that, and we'll move on.
It's a fascinating time in the game, without a doubt. And it's great to have your insight with us every week, Rocket. One more week of home and away, and then we're into the big stuff. We appreciate your time. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
See you, boys. Have a good week.